Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and what are you looking at?
What am I doing wrong?
What am I doing wrong? What am I doing? Is there a flag waving or anything that?
I'm just watching.
You feel sorry for me now, don't you, Mark?
I kind of do. Yeah. I kind of do. I thought we had a PFL when I did that, but we're having problems with the board, so we're just kind of playing with it, and I don't have any kind of oh, that's the wrong button. You know, you can always know when you push the wrong button. Okay. Kurt from Kurt's Automotive is sitting to my left. Across to my right is Jeff and Eric. Oh, my God, he's sitting next to me.
Yeah, he's watching you.
He's watching me. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, now's the time to talk. There's four master techs in this room.
Yep.
So, and then how many years of experience? I'm going to ask the other two, so you're not going to get as much time as he is, okay? So come up with your numbers.
At least 30.
Okay, 30 years for Kurt.
I make it 35.
35, okay.
Yeah. I've worked at Kurt's 20 years now.
Okay, 20.
I'm 18.
Okay, 18, and I'm 39. Okay, work with me here. 13 and 9 is 22.
22.
Carrier 2, so 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 112 years of experience sits in this room.
That still doesn't make me know anything.
I know. You're the only one, though. The rest of us are a lot wiser than that.
Yeah.
And our wives are sitting at home going, and they're rolling their eyes and all that other kind of stuff. Uh-huh. You know. And so you go, just sit there and be quiet and let us be boys. So this is kind of we're here all alone. I've got all the doors locked. I've got the security system set. So there's no way that they're going to be able to be involved in the show.
Yeah.
They can call you on the phone, but you're supposed to mute your phone. Remember, that was the rule. It's muted.
But text us.
Oh, they can text us?
Yeah.
Give me your phones. We're not doing that. Yeah. We're just not going to do that. So, nevertheless, it's the same old thing, 602-508-0960. So, Eric, anybody kicked your butt in a while on a car?
Well, do I want to admit to it?
No, tell, you know, blame it on another tech.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Jeff was working on a car. You know that didn't happen. So, Jeff was working on a car. I'll spot you that much, and you go from there.
Well, one of the worst ones, and I'll have to admit that it actually left because the customer was tired of spending money.
Okay.
It was a 045 Escape.
Okay.
And it would just randomly shut down on three cylinders.
Okay.
And through the barrage, I mean, good powers, good grounds, new coils, check injector signals, cam crank signals. I mean, just everything. And back, basically, after we said, well, we know this is bad, and then change this. Well, it didn't change this part of it, but it changed this. Went through just after 2.5 or 3 months, he says, you know what? Get it running the best you can. I'm going to just get rid of it. It's a headache for all of us.
Yeah.
And so I seen him a few months later, and he said, some guy thought he could fix it, so he bought it for me. Okay. So it left. I don't know what was wrong with it.
And I want to draw the distinction. When we check cam and crank signal, we are looking at a television screen, watching it operate. It's not really a matter of putting a new one in
because
here's the deal. Folks don't understand. If you put a new one in, let's say a new one, you really don't know what the signal looks like. So if we're looking at a signal over here that we have three pops, okay, and we're supposed to have six, right? You're dropping three?
Yeah.
So we're looking at the existing cam sensor or crank sensor, and we've got three pops, but we don't have three. So when we put a new one on, it's got three pops, and we don't have three, then it's not it.
Yeah.
So we got a signal problem. We got something coming in that's lying.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of changing parts. It's more sophisticated than that.
Yeah.
We can actually watch the operation of these concerns that way. Right?
Yep.
Right? Okay, so nothing happened?
No, I mean, it got to the point, it was so random, like I said, it would just shut down complete signal, like it was losing, you know, like a cam signal, but it wasn't. All signals were good, going in, coming out. We even tried to use PCM, or new PCM, mm-hmm. just to see if it was interpretation problems.
Right.
I mean, just the barrage check, you know, ground resistances and loaded powers, loaded ground. I mean, just everything.
Nothing.
It had me scratching my head, and the customer says, well, it's going to be a headache. I'm giving it to my 16-year-old daughter, and it needs to be reliable. So it's just too much. So.
And how many hours did you bill for, and how many hours did you spend?
I think we billed for 8 or something and had 40 in it or something.
Okay. And that we do that. And we don't do it to people that walk in the first time.
No.
Okay? We're not going to have somebody, and I say this, and it's kind of crass, but you're not going to come in and poop on my desk and be my first-time customer. Okay? That ain't happening. Okay? You take your car to whoever's been taking your money the last 10 years, but some people will be offended by that, but it's a business decision. I'll do it for somebody who's done business with me. I've made money off of before.
Yeah.
You know what that means? I got to tell you a funny story. A lady sends me an email, and she's very nice. And she says, please get rid of the doorbell. And I said, okay. I said, why? And she says, because every time the doorbell rings, my husband and I listen to your show, and every time the dogs go crazy. Now, I'll bet you dollars to donuts. Do you have dogs?
I do.
Okay, do they go crazy when the doorbell rings?
Yes, they can.
And mine do, too. And so we put, Gil, give us the air gun again. Watch this. All right, that's our new one. If her dogs are barking, then they're sick. They need a psychiatrist.
Well, maybe they're junkyard dogs.
Doberman, too. Yeah. That's right. So it's a done deal. All righty, Gil, who we got on it?
Hey, your first caller is John.
Okay, John, you're up first, buddy. How can we help you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, I've got a Honda Accent. It's a 2010 model, and this thing, going down the road, it'll just die. And then sometime later, it may or may not restart.
Okay.
And I just had this notion, I could be wrong, but I had this notion that it's a fuel pump.
Okay. So did you put a fuel pump in it?
No.
Okay. All right. Okay. And I'll kind of start it out. Uh-huh. It's spark or fuel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got to figure out which one it is. So sooner or later, I'll tell you what I would tell to my customer. I'd give him an old spark plug. Is this coil over, you think, at 10?
Probably.
Yes, it will be.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I'm going to stick a pin through the through the boot or something. I'm going to figure out a way for him to check for spark in the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
So just have your wife crank and just kind of touch this and see if you get a little bite and we have spark.
Yeah.
Because in the old days, we could pull a spark plug boot and put a spark plug in there and stuff like that, but it's difficult. You know what else I was thinking? I don't know if you guys have ever done this, but those little bitty neon lights that they use for Christmas lights, you could wrap those around a spark plug wire, and they would draw enough electricity to flash.
Yeah, they should flash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I had made it kind of a tachometer, and I had put 8 of them in a circle, and then I had wired them around the firing order. Huh. So they would just circle, and it was kind of a nifty little thing that cost me $7,000 to build. But I was in high school, and I didn't have any other place for my time. But it's spark or fuel. So the real question is if it came, let's forget about our shops. A good guy will do what first?
Is there any codes in the system?
No check engine light, right, John?
No check engine light.
Okay.
Okay. And so you look for that, you throw a fuel pressure gauge on it, and you'll drive it and see if you can duplicate the problem.
Okay. And if he's a good customer, we'll probably leave it on for a day because we got more than one or charge him $20 for the use of our. And I don't know, where do you guys put the gauge? We just tape it, duct tape it to the front of the windshield.
That's
right
what
to
we
the windshield.
Do. Yeah.
And so you give him the car back and say, you know, if you've been a good boy and haven't been cheating on your wife, then the car's going to die while you have our gauge on there. The question is what does the gauge read when the motor stops?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So if it's 45 and the motor stops, we got a spark problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
So then we can go into the cam and crank sensors, the coils and the PCMs and stuff like that. So that's kind of really has to do. Do you have a shop that you patronize, John?
No. The car hasn't given us any trouble, except for now.
Okay.
So we haven't established a shop anywhere.
Okay. And this is something that's certainly fixable. This isn't going to eat our lunch.
No.
It's a matter of step one is a spark or fuel.
Yeah.
It's not compression. It's not a timing belt.
No.
It's not a plugged catalytic converter. It's not all that stuff. This is spark or fuel. So we got to figure out which one it is. Now, if it is a fuel pump, then the question is if the fuel pressure drops to zero instantly, or does it drop from 45 to 20? Which could be a fuel pressure regulator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of other things. One of the things that you can do to help you the shop out, and this will save you some diagnostic money, is run the tank down low and see if it's worse. Because the fuel pump is lubricated and cooled by the gas in the tank. So there's a lot of ASU kids that run off the bottom eighth of the tank, and we put pumps in their cars a lot because the pump is up there in the atmosphere, and it's not being cooled or lubricated by the gas.
Yeah.
So if you drop your tank down, have your wife drive it. It's better than that way anyway.
Okay. But yeah. Okay, so she gets stranded, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, the idea is down at an eighth of a tank, low. If it happens more regularly, then you fill it up and work off the top three-quarters of the tank, and it's much longer distance.
2 minutes.
Then how much has he saved himself in some diagnostic money?
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say between $30 and $70.
Yep.
Can we agree to that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So if somebody walks into you and says, okay, the gas tank real low, and it dies a lot, and I fill it up to the three-quarter mark or higher, and it's much, much better.
Yeah.
Right. What else can it be?
Yeah.
So at that particular point, you look at it. Now, this is a Ford, so it could have 30,000 miles and the pump's just shot.
I think he's at a Hyundai, Mark.
Oh, a Hyundai. I'm just trying to dig the Ford.
You take any opportunity you can.
I can.
You'll make them up.
So the idea is that that's an easy one. Now, it's not necessarily we're going to go right to putting the pump in it, but if it's got 120,000, 130,000 miles, then the conversation is, do you want us to put a pump in it? Because the symptoms you're describing match perfectly a pump.
Mm-hmm.
And so the lifestyle or the lifespan is your car's been around the world five times. So we got 120,000 miles on it, and most of them don't last that long. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Give me the middle. What's the earliest you've seen a pump and the latest you've sent a pump across the board?
30,000 miles is the earliest I've ever seen one go out.
Okay.
And that's unusual.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That was probably Ford. Go ahead, guys.
Well, we did have that one Ford that made it 300,000 or 400,000, too.
Uh-oh.
And then that's possible.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's possible. That's possible. Okay, I'm going to agree to that. I'm going to agree to that.
I'm 180,000.
Mark, let me ask you something.
Okay.
If I drive the car until it goes into failure mode, and I take some starting fluid and shoot it into the intake, and if that makes it start, does that indicate a fuel pump?
Yes. Yes. It absence
fuel
of fuel.
Delivery,
yeah, it's an absence of fuel for sure.
And another thing is have you had the filter changed on it in a long time?
You know what? I'll check that.
Okay, and here's the filter. The filter is going to starve the motor at higher RPMs and higher load and higher speeds. So if you're dying on the freeway and you're not dying around town, then the filter would be the first $100 I'd spend of your money.
Okay.
So, and that's kind of where you come in. You can't just come in and lay that stuff on our desk and figure that we're going to magically wave our wand. If you come to the party with some information, you're going to benefit from that. Mm-hmm. So we've given you two things. Does the level of the fuel in the tank make any difference? And number two, does it die more predominantly at high load situations or around town? And those are the two things. But yes, if it doesn't, if it cranks but doesn't start, injecting some kind of carb spray, brake spray, propane, whatever. Yes, if it starts and runs, it'll die. That means it's a fuel starvation problem.
Yeah.
All righty. All right. Good luck to you. Good luck to you. 602-508-0960. If you have anything, I want to tell you something real quick. I know I'm behind the break. I had a guy send me an email the other day, and he tells me that his car has a hiccup. And then he goes into spark plugs and coils and mass airflow sensors, and I'm exaggerating here, but he had replaced everything. He'd been on YouTube University. He had talked to all these other people, and now he thinks it might be a timing chain that slipped, and he replaced the distributor, and now he's got a code for the distributor because he hasn't synchronized it, I guess. And so you have all this dynamics going on, and I wrote him back, and I said just – kind of bluntly, so all I get is it's got a hiccup. That's all I get. I get the one sentence, it's got a hiccup, and then I've got four paragraphs of what you've done. And the only thing I can tell you is everything you've done hasn't affected it.
Yeah. We know what it ain't.
Yeah, we know what it ain't. So anyway, when we come back, I'll tell you what Alan said it was. And it's kind of an interesting concept, but he says, I've seen that before a lot. Now, real quick, what is it when they kill the cylinders on a General Motors product?
Deactivation.
I know, but what's the acronym for it?
Multiple MDI.
Is something
MDS.
Like that.
MDS.
MDS. Okay. So when we come back, we're going to talk about that. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute.
Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil, an Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around since Jesus was a baby, but Phil says 1968. He started with transmissions before they had electronic solenoids, before they had computers that shifted up and down for you. So he knows the old ones, and he knows the new ones, which is something that we rarely see in any environment, and certainly in Phoenix as well. So he's at 40th Street in Washington. He's been there since 1968. If you go up and down Washington on the north side of the street at 40th Street, you'll see his facility. And he's been around a very long time, and he's very good at what he does. So you've got Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. There's Trey, and then there's another Philip. And so all three of those guys are handle the front counters. So it's a good place if you have a transmission problem. You're in Phoenix, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Just real quick, we got a couple of calls. We were talking about this hiccup thing. Okay, and you thought it was a torque converter.
Yeah.
And so basically it's going, for people, it's going in and out of high gear. And so it goes, ee-ee-ee-ee. So I think you can drag your foot on the brake enough to light the brake pedal or light the brake lights, and that will quit. That should quit.
Yeah, that should quit.
Okay, so we can tell people you do that. Not enough to slow you down, just enough to light the brakes.
Yep.
In that 5.3, he talked about a hiccup, and Alan thought it was that multiple cylinder select. Yeah. And he said the same thing. I think you can cancel that by dragging your feet over it. But we didn't pick up that it was a 98.
Yeah.
And so that would have eliminated that.
Yeah.
All righty, Don, you're up first. How can I help you?
Good morning. I've got an 01 GMC Sonoma pickup, four-cylinder.
Okay.
How can I make that thing run cooler? I've got all new parts, fan clutch, radiator, water pump, everything brand new, but it still runs hot, and I can't run the air conditioner very
well. All right, what does hot mean? That's the first question. What does hot mean?
Well, the needle is just very center at the top. I think it's running temperature, but it runs even hotter. I put 180-degree thermostat in it to make it, and I've also added ice to the coolant.
Okay. All right, well, we don't agree with anything that you've done so far. What we want to do is we want to know exactly on the gauge, is it running half, is it running three-quarters, or is it close to the red?
It's not even close to the red.
Is it between half and three-quarters?
Oh, it's half the gauge.
Okay, well, we think you're wrong, and I think it's unanimous.
Yes.
You made a terrible step backwards by dropping a 180 in that because the computer's not going to like that. You're going to lose some fuel economy because the computer thinks the motor's running too cold, and so it's going to add more fuel, and it's going to cost you some fuel economy, and it's a catalytic converter.
You know what the OE temp on my truck is?
195 to 220?
Yeah.
208 is the temp on the thermostat on my truck.
Oh, okay. So that's a newer one.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to tell you is that between half and three-quarters is absolutely normal. And we think, and if anybody wants to argue, we think you ought to put the 195 back in it, and you should be happy that you're between half and three-quarters, and in our opinion, there's nothing wrong with your car.
Yes, and the GMs of that era wouldn't even turn electric fan on until about 228, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, and so he's not even going to get that till he gets above the half mark.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. You're pushing three-quarter gauge before they turn electric fans on.
Right. So
that's
not
a problem.
Now, of all the cars we see every day in our life, isn't it true that half to three-quarters is a normal range?
That's where they're
right at
everything.
Half gauge all the time.
Let's go back in years. I want to go back to 1996 when we first saw fuel injection and O2 sensors.
Yeah.
I want to go back to there. So if you do agree that all the way back to 96, regardless of the car, half to three-quarters is the number?
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm fine.
Okay. Okay, Don, we've given you the best we can offer you, and we didn't even charge you for it. So thank you very much for that. Larry, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, guys. I have a 81 El Camino. You both might be familiar with it. That has a 01 Silverado engine in it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Dropped it off at Kurt's, and I think, if you guys remember, you did some stuff with the O2 sensor, and there were other problems, and you recommended we have it dyno tuned.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Is there a good end to this story or a bad end to this story?
Could we quit holding our breath?
There's not a good end yet.
Okay.
Okay, so my wife called you, Mark, and got a recommendation somewhere to have it dyno-tuned.
Well, we looked at it, too, because we wanted a fresh pair of eyes on it, and then it ended up over in a dyno place just south of us.
Yeah. Okay. So they dyno-tuned it. It ran great for about a month. And then it went back to doing the limp mode thing, which was the original problem.
Okay.
So I took it back to them again, and, they were real good. You know, everybody's been great about it, but my wallet's bruised.
Okay.
And then they looked at some more, and then they found that the air take or the intake manifold had been modified. They had literally cut the bottom out of it to clear the NOx sensors.
Okay.
So they hunted high and low to find an intake manifold that would fit in the El Camino because it's, you know, a smaller compartment. And they did that. I got it back about 2 weeks ago. It ran great till Sunday, and I was driving home, and it went back into limp mode again. So I'm just curious if you guys have an idea where to go from here.
No, this your car is a hybrid, and because it's a mix of an 81 to an 01, a 20-year spread, none of us have the ability to fix this car, and because there's software, and it's proprietary software, and it's software that we've never seen, and we can't actually watch what's going on and during that period of time because all of us did that. I don't know that you have any other option other than continuing to work with the shop down on Chandler Boulevard. And I think what I'm going to arm you with is you need to say to them, we need to kind of make progress. And so if there's going to be a guest, can we talk about in advance who's going to pay for the guests?
Yes, because I've spent
1 minute.
About $5,500 on it.
I understand that, but you also have a car there that 99% of the people in the world cannot work on for performance problems.
Oh, I understand that. It's so, it's Frankenstein.
And,
you know,
and it's your wife's fault because I think she bought it for you. and so if that's the case, then that's if you need a good divorce attorney, I'm happy to give you a phone number for that.
Well, or, I heard my son bought it for me. And I should have spent the money on my 85 instead.
Well, and I just think that you're gonna be better off by continuing to work with them. Perhaps.
Well, I'm going to.
Okay, but the measurement. Hey, the measurement is you need to say to them better, worse, or the same, and give them an explanation. Okay, that's going to help move you forward. To walk back in and hand them the keys and say it's doing the same thing might not be in your best interest. So all I'm saying to you is, and then you can pull the negative battery cable and try a new one on, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem with Kurt from Kurt's Automotive. We got Eric and Jeff, so we got four master techs in the room, and unfortunately on the 81 El Camino that's now a hybrid with a 01 computer-operated car and fuel injection that it didn't come with. Unfortunately, we've discussed it during the break, and we all agree that there's no way we can even, because we don't know if it's running rich or if it's running lean. We don't know if the NOx sensor, I mean, how hard is it to plug into the assembly line data link, the DLC, and hit the intake with a hammer and see the NOx sensor? Or talk to us.
That's easy.
I mean, that's easy.
Yeah.
So the question really is how did we get to a NOx sensor? And if that NOx sensor is not talking, then the timing's running wild, and it should have been pinging like a crazy dog.
Yeah. Right.
So we don't know all that.
Yeah.
We don't know all
that.
And
he said something about clearance on the NOx sensor.
Yeah.
So I was like, that doesn't happen. It's not possible.
Well, but keep in mind this. Both of us, neither one of us could fix this car.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So we're going to leave it to the guy who at least got it some period of time okay.
Yeah.
But in defense of him, this is going to be a difficult thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nevertheless, let's go to the phones. Richard, you're up first. How can we help you, Richard?
Yeah, Mark, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I just want to give a shout-out to Larry Hawker Auto,
okay,
one of your preferred shops. I had a situation with a brake master cylinder on a Ford Super Duty motorhome chassis.
Okay.
And I had purchased the wrong part from Advance Auto, and a friend of mine who's a certified master tech was going to install it for me. And when I brought it to him, he said it's the wrong master cylinder. I'm like, what do you mean? It's exactly what the book said for a Ford 460 with cruise. The F53 chassis. Well, the one that I had purchased had three ports, and the one that's actually on my motorhome is two ports. So, long and short, he wasn't able to do this Monday night. We were going to be going out of town on Tuesday. So I started calling around all your shops. We did the Kurtz, the Action Auto, S&S, T-Bird, Mike's, Automotive Dynamics, and finally got to Larry Harker. And they said, well, if you bring it in, we'll take a look at it and see if we can get to it. And Bob was just so accommodating, Ellen, and I guess their tech, Jim and Christian, are the ones that actually did the work. But they were able to get me out the door in less than 2 hours. So
okay.
Just want to give a little shout out.
And I've got exactly that, and I've got it down from 24 to 25. So there's a minute and a half free commercial for Harker's, but he's worth it.
Yeah.
Because he took that in. I do want to comment on two things that you said. If there's a master tech out there that's working without a shop, then he's not making the $50,000 to $125,000 that he would make with me or for you.
Yeah.
And so it's easy for everybody to say that they're a master tech, but it's also those are not the kind of mistakes that we expect our master techs to make. Chime in, boys,
well,
if you think.
Mark?
Yeah?
He didn't actually make the mistake. He works for another operation during the day. He has his own shop at night, but he's a personal friend of mine.
Okay, I understand that, but if it's presented to us, then we would see that the ports are different, and we would know why the ports are different. And we would know your F53 chassis, and we would look at your chassis, and we would look at the part. And this wouldn't have been something that should... I'm not saying anything other than we hear this all the time. We hear this all the time. And the standard answer is, well, I had this master tech look at it, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And we just hear that a lot. And all I'm suggesting is... that we have lots of people who represent themselves in a fashion that perhaps doesn't work. Bob's a master tech at Harker's. It took him 2 hours to figure this out.
Yeah.
And so those are the kinds of guys we rely on. The guys that are levels below us, if we're seniors in high schools, we're talking about guys that are in the fifth and sixth grade. Mm-hmm. We're not going to really kind of hold their opinion unless they can say to us, oh, there's a difference of 2 to 3 ports on this Hydro Booster master cylinder. And then, of course, we can see that. But I'm glad that Harker's took you. I'm glad that he pulled this off in 2 hours.
Yes.
And I know what it's like when you have a motorhome and you've got things getting ready to
go. 4th of July.
And you're ready to go, and all of a sudden you've got a brake problem. And, of course, the wife can drink herself silly, but she's still going to know if you don't have brakes.
Yeah.
And so, but anyway, thank you very much for that, Richard. And I noticed that, and I'm going to cut that tape out, and I'm going to send it to Larry and his wife, Ellen, and let them know that there's somebody out there happy. Sam, you're up next. Sam, how can I help you?
Oh, hi. How you doing this morning?
Good, good.
I've got a 65 Chevy El Camino, but I've also got a 1978 Chevy half-ton block in it. I need to get a starter. Is that what I tell the guy at the parts counter? I want a starter for a 78?
I think you take the old starter off and take it down with you. And if the guy's halfway smart, he's going to look at the part number, and he's probably going to say it's a 3510, and it's probably the same starter. Anybody got a different opinion?
That was probably the same one. But
It's worth taking it down. It's worth putting them side by side. And who diagnosed the starter, and why do you think it's it?
Well, I just started the El Camino up like 2 days ago, and it started fine, the normal, usual way. And I tried to start it last night, and the Bendix or the gear, whatever, it just sounds like it's jamming in there, and it doesn't crank the motor.
Okay. All right. Well, let me make a suggestion to you. Do you have a digital voltometer or some kind of a meter?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, have your wife holding on the battery, because what you're describing is the solenoid is activating the starter drive, but the motor's not spinning. And it could be because the starter needs 9.6 volts in order to operate, and it could be that you're down to 8.1 when you hit the key. Mm-hmm. And so you can put starters in there until we're all dead, and you ain't never going to fire that El Camino up. So all I'm suggesting is you look at the voltage at the battery during the starting process from key on. From key off, what's the voltage? Key on, what's the voltage? In the crank mode, click, and starter activation, what's the voltage? If any of that drops it down below 9.6, then you're barking up the wrong tree, at least now. May I also suggest that you go to marksalem.com and look at FAQ 28. I will help you diagnose the starter, the solenoid, the bad battery cables, and the bad batteries by watching the headlights.
Yeah.
So you can just go through that FAQ 28, and it will help you. But we all believe right? 3510 on the starter?
Yeah.
Small block Chevy
starter?
Yeah, it's
going to be a standard one.
Okay. And we think that if you take the old one out and take it down there and you match up the mounting holes and the nose and the clocking of it, all that kind of stuff, then if it's side by side and it's exactly the same, I think. Now, we're assuming there's a gray-haired guy at the auto parts
store.
Yeah,
and you want to watch for a shim under that too, I think, Mark.
Yes, yes,
because
you're right.
If there's a shim under that and you don't put it back in, it's going to run too deep.
Exactly. So you're going to, when you take it out of the two big long 916 heads, 3/8 bolts, you drop it down. Make sure that there's not a shim there. And if the shim falls on the ground, don't forget it goes back there.
Yeah.
So anyway, got to take a break. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. I'm going to push that one off and push that one on. Okay, fine. Eric actually handles the audio board for your church.
Yeah.
And so he's real, and I put him next to me because when I get frazzled, I forget to push the right button. So he's saying, he's pointing his fingers, and he's saying, you need to push that button and turn that one off. But you're right. You're right. I'm not going to complain. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We talk about the 65 off the break because we do a lot of our conversations. The 65 El Camino with a 78 Chevy motor in it. We're pretty sure on a 3510 starter. But in reality, if it's got a 78 Chevrolet motor in it, then he would order based on the block. So he would pretend it's a 78 in a whatever.
Yeah.
We can all agree that it doesn't make any difference if it's an El Camino or it's a Malibu or whatever else they had, an Impala back in 78. It's going to be the starter. So when you have that, you could, in this case, order for a 65 El Camino, but we think it would be better to talk about a 78 Chevrolet El Camino or whatever.
Unless he's running a 65 El Camino flywheel and bell housing and transmission.
You're right.
An old power glide.
Okay, well then I'm going to change it because he just screwed everything up.
Good at that, Mark.
Okay, it's going to be one or the other. You're either going to order for a 65 El Camino or a 78 El Camino, one or the other.
Yeah.
All righty, let's go to the phones. Bob or Rob. It's Rob. Rob, how can we help you today?
Hey, question, Mark. Hey. First of all, your recommendation for the shop out by me was wonderful. I think it's Action Auto or...
No, Action.
It's on... maybe just off the 17...
In Deer Valley, and his name is Tom, and the shop is named Action Auto, and thank you very much for letting me know that he took good care of you.
Yeah, they're wonderful. Okay. My question is, yesterday, got in to drive the 2007 Cadillac SPS, and it would not engage into drive. I got the park, reverse, neutral, and then nothing on the dash, and the only way I could get the forward transmission to engage was to push on the traction control button.
Okay, now hold on just a minute. We have a bunch of guys smiling. Eric. Eric, we're going to point to Jeff. Jeff, what are you doing? You're pointing one another now. All right, guess. Go ahead. Eric, guess.
Yeah.
Eric, boy, this doesn't work out very well.
We're waiting to hear the rest of the symptoms here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was...
Well, he says he's pushing the traction control button on and off, and now he gets forward motion gear.
Exactly. But it doesn't show anything, when you go through the gears, and I have to go up to park, hit the traction control button, and then shift quickly back into drive, and then I can get forward. But other than that, the normal, forward transmission is not happening.
So on your dash where it shows park, reverse, neutral, drive, you don't get the drive symbol?
No, the D is not there.
Yeah, we got electrical.
Yeah, it's got a range sensor or something acting up.
So it's got the computer doesn't know you're putting it in drive, so it's going to leave it in park or neutral. So we have to fix. I think the symptom we've got is we don't get a drive light up. So we have to look at that. Now it could be a park neutral switch. The park neutral switch tells the dash what to say its gears, and so when you shift it, you're moving this lever from park, reverse, neutral. It's called the Prindle. P-R-N-D-L, so to speak. So on the Prindle on your dash is not talking, and that means the computer tells the Prindle what to say, but the computer's not seeing it. So my guess, would be a park neutral switch. Agree?
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. And then they run that the range sensor through the TCM, which then talks to the gateway module.
Okay. We have to talk in English.
I'm sorry.
All right. The range sensor is going to talk to the
transmission control module.
Thank you very much.
Which then talks to probably the body control module.
It might have a direct ECM module to or ECM. the engine module.
Engine control module.
Which then talks to the instrument cluster.
Okay. And so we've got, but we understand the path.
It's just like a network of home computers. They talk on a network. Okay. And anything in the network that drops out can cause the same thing.
But we can go in with our scanner, not the code reader the three-whiskered kid at AutoZone has.
Right.
We're talking about a scanner that costs $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. And we're going to go in there, and we're going to look at the transmission control module. We're going to look at the ECM. We're going to look at all of this, and we're going to follow the signal through. Mm-hmm. So as we roughhouse the shifter, and as we roughhouse the park neutral switch, and as we roughhouse the brake light, the brake switch, we're going to see whether it we're going to follow it from where it goes, and where it goes. Right?
Right.
And that's going to cost somewhere as little as and as much as a diagnostic procedure. I'm going to guess $50 to $150.
Yeah. Sounds fair.
Fair enough? Okay. So that's what
the guy at Action Auto said that, you know, they would have to check and make sure that it wasn't something in the shifter, but it seems to me like it would be some sort of sensor because they put the diagnostic equipment on it and actually reset it, but it only lasted, you know, less than a day.
Okay. All right, well, here's the problem you got, okay? If you want to drive the train, be prepared to pay for all the detours you take. But if you want them to drive the train, then just make sure you have parameters of high and low before he starts. It's a bad idea for the customer to tell us how to fix their car. And I think Tom is a good qualified technician.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we all like Tom, and we're going to throw that on the table right now. We know Tom. We like Tom. We have his cell phone. I have a cell phone in my – well, I ride a cell phone at payphone booths. You know, for car repair advice, call Tom at
you
this
number. You
forgot
the free.
The free, yeah. But I think what you do is the best thing you could do, and correct me if I'm wrong, you guys, is demonstrate the problem again.
Yep.
Yeah.
And demonstrate it to Tom or the guy who's going to work on the car. Insist that they see what happens. Now, if you get there and it doesn't happen, then be prepared to sit in the lobby, key in your pocket, let it cool down just a little bit, and go out and see if it is. Now, for me, I'd want to just have a scanner when he turns the key on and see if it's going to happen. I'll be ready for that. But that's how I would do it. Yeah. I don't mean to say that you're not right. I just think that it's kind of like telling the doctor how to diagnose your owie underneath your arms.
Let me ask you one other quick question.
Okay.
Once the forward drivetrain is engaged, is there any problem or is there a chance that that could then just slip out of gear and, you know, because I've got to do a little bit of driving and last thing I want to do at 110 degrees is have that thing start, you know, slipping.
Okay. Well, I can't answer your question because we haven't had a chance to fix the car yet. Once we fix the car, Tom should be able to tell you, I'm convinced I've got the right part. I'm convinced everything will be fine from this point. But if he makes a guess, part of that's going to be, I'm making a guess. And the worst case scenario is yeah, you're going to have to tow it in. One of the things I want you to do is I want you to put it in low and see if the L light lows or if we just lost the D light. So I want you to play around. I need to know when you take it out of park, have we lost everything? Have we lost reverse, neutral, drive, 1, 2, 3? I want to know all that. So you need to move the shifter around because if you say I bang the shifter and kind of muscle the shifter and everything works fine, that kind of helps us out.
Yeah.
So that's how I would handle it. Thank you very much, Rob. Good luck. And thank you for your attaboy as far as Action Auto is on Deer Valley, northwest corner, Deer Valley, I-17, and Deer Valley. And we've got another caller.
This is Jerry.
Jerry, good morning to you. What is it? What's the burr under your saddle?
Well, I have a Durango that's on its way out the door, and the guys at Kurtz have worked on it, and so looks like I'm going to be in the market. I'm probably going to buy a used one through a dealership. So I want to know, what should I be looking for? I'm looking for something that's going to be kept now. I got to be able to pull a 3,000-pound trailer.
Okay.
So I know I'm looking for a small SUV. Not really caring what brand, and that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking what kind of things should I look for on the vehicle.
There's 1,200 models of cars and trucks out there. I'm not going to speak for Kurtz. I'm not going to speak for Kurtz, but I'm going to tell you, if you were my customer, I would say, Jerry, you've got to narrow it down for us. You know, you've tell us, what is it? Is it a Chevy, a Ford, a Dodge, a Toyota? What do you want? Four-wheel drive, two-wheel drive? Do you want a V8? Do you want a supercharged motor? You have to narrow it down. You got to go get a little homework, and then you walk in and say, do I use an Isuzu Trooper, or do I use a three-quarter ton Dodge?
I'm probably looking at another Durango.
Okay.
Just because we like the way they are. But do you have any wisdom in buying one? I mean, like, how to deal with the dealership? Do I take the car, even though it's at the dealership, do I have somebody like Kurt look at it before I purchase it?
Well, okay, you got three questions there.
Which one of the guys
there?
That Kurt wants to go with me?
Oh, yeah. At 100 and what's your labor rate?
$120.
Okay, at $120 an hour, I think you ought to do that yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking. The answer, you threw three questions out there. If you're going to do with a new car dealer, you just deal with them yourself, and you do more than one.
Is it a new car he's buying or a used car?
Well, that's question number two.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, question number two, he now talks, do I have it checked out? And the answer is, heck yes.
If it's new, that's not necessary, but anything used. Yeah.
Right. And if it's used, now what's your used car check over? Mine's $125.
We're usually doing about $90.
Okay. So we've got $90 to $125, and we're going to go through it and tell you stuff that you need now, tomorrow, next week, next year. And we're going to put some numbers to it. And if you're really good, you'll go back and negotiate that as a discount.
Right.
And we had a lady the other day. We did a used car check over. We wrote $750 worth of work that it needed right now. She went back. They did the $750 worth of work. We charged her $100, and she said that was really a good deal.
Yeah.
It cost me $100 to save $750, and they did all the work. But she did one other thing. Before she bought it, she brought it to us to verify all the work was done, and we're happy to say it was.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So those are the kinds of questions that you have. Yes, a used car checkover is important, and if they won't let you take it to the shop of your choice, there's a bad reason why they won't.
Yeah, they've already answered your question.
Okay. They've already answered. Thank you. That's a very good. As far as the Durango is concerned, it's comparable to the General Motors, Tahoe, and stuff like that. So I would look at a lot of those. It's a little smaller than the Tahoe, but if you wanted a little bit more power, then the 6-liter or 6.2 liter in a Tahoe wouldn't be a bad idea. Mm-hmm. And if you want a Suburban and you got a large family, then you can put the Cadillac XLT behind it or in front of it or whatever. But if anybody has a used Mercedes-Benz grill ornament, I'd like to buy that. If anybody has that, because I want to put that on the front of my grill of my Dodge.
I'll get you one, Mark.
No, you know how much they are? They're like $1,000.
Mean the big one that's lit?
No, well, I'll take that.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to buy it unless you can deliver it in your driver's license, because I'm not going to have somebody go steal one and then sell it to me. So I'm taking your driver's license, but that is an issue. All right, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you got a car question, we're going to be here for another hour. So we've got Kurt to my left, master technician, ASE master technician. You got 112 years of experience sitting right here in this room. You've got quite a few head injuries and some alcohol-related accidents. I'm talking about me, okay? I'm not talking about you guys. I've got a lot of traumatic head injuries, and I blame my inability to sometimes. But anyway, 602-508-0960. Then we got Eric and Jeff, both ASE Master Certified Technicians. Like I said, between all of us, it's 112 years. And I'm 2 seconds late, and we'll see you in a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Mark Salem, Kurt Rock, and his two master techs. And Kurt's a master, and I'm a master, so all three of us can help you out. 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about another really good shop in town. On the west side, you've got S&S Tire. He has three locations, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Now, what's really nice is that when you buy your tires from a shop, and then you're going to have the front end checked out. The shop, the most important part of that transition is looking at the old tires, because they tell a story. if the old tires have a great wear pattern on them, then there is no need to do any front-end work, suspension work, ride control work, or any of that stuff. So it's kind of nice. What's the worst-case scenario is you buy a set of tires and bring it to another shop and say, check out the front end. Mm-hmm. If we had the front tires, it would be better on the old front tires. But S&S can provide all of that service. So you can go in and say, I want three prices for three sets of tires, and how much do I write my check for good, better, best? Because maybe it's a lease and you're going to return it. Or maybe you're going to give it to your mother-in-law and you want rag tires on it. Or for whatever reason. But if you want brand new tires and the very best they've got, and I'm making a joke here, then that's it. So when you look at S&S, not only can they do wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between, but they can install new tires and they're going to give you good, best, and better. And they can also read the old tires and make suggestions with respect to alignment, ride control, and stuff like that. So S&S is a good place on the west side. It's Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Let's go to David. David, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. Yes, I have a kind of like a different question here. I believe that you said you've had the privilege to tour a automotive plant.
I have numerous times. Are you talking about a place that makes cars?
Yeah, like General Motors, Ford, or Dodge, Chrysler.
Yeah.
My question is, when they design and build a car and then you see them out on the road as like test mules, what do they look for, or how long do they drive these test mules? Are they more for finding defects or faults or something they can correct down the road, or
I can answer the question. What you're talking about, oftentimes these cars are incognito.
Yeah.
They're wrapped up with big pieces of vinyl, and the headlights have to shine through a grill and all that other kind of stuff. And as a matter of fact, I've seen 100 of them between Payson and Pine, and it's a truck, and it's got a trailer with a load on it.
Yeah.
What they're doing is they have the most sophisticated sensor system in these newer vehicles, and it's being transported, all that information, to the cloud. The drivers have a very specific way and a specific way to drive the car and through the terrain. So between Pine and Strawberry and probably the rim. They're probably coming from Happy Jack or Flagstaff and coming down the rim and going back up. They're doing all kinds of testing. They're doing tailpipe, fuel emissions. They're doing stopping power, how much pressure he puts on the brake pedal, and how fast, what kind of G's is it stopping, how much instantaneous speed does he have, how does it steer, how many times is he sawing the steering wheel back and forth, and fill in anything else that you've got. And what kind of throttle angle is he got, and his throttle angle is 27%, and he's getting 10 miles an hour. Salem's throttle angle is 37%, and he's getting 8 miles an hour. And then they know that Salem's being an idiot and throttling up harder and going faster than the speed limit. So the answer to your question is, everything they design, and correct me if I'm wrong, everything that's in a new model car has to do with fuel economy today. Every single thing they do. And so we're going to go to a 0.16 weight, and we're going to go to a 0.8 weight, and pretty soon we're going to be putting water, an oil with the consistency of water, in your car, because it'll get better fuel economy.
Yeah, sure.
So they're lightening the cars up. That's why they used the small spare way 100 years ago, is to get a couple of extra pounds. They're raising the tire pressure in some of the cars to make them roll better. They're doing lots of changes, and those test cars are just exactly what they do. And we're looking at cars that are going to be out in 2 years.
Yep.
When we see those incognito, they're not coming out for 2 years. So they're running 2, 3, and 4 years behind or ahead of where we're at today. Did that do it?
So to answer question two, so when they design a car and they design an engine to put in it, do they test these engines at the manufacturing plant to make sure that they have a specific hold, they hold up, or because then when new models come out, they always seem to have like technical service bulletins or recalls, and I thought these test mule cars were the reason why they go out and drive these, to, you know, if they catch defects or flaws.
No, no. If I gave you a 1940s house to live in, and then I gave you a house that was made last week, the technology changes dramatically. There's going to be mistakes. They can make 2,000 changes from one year to the next, and there's going to be software problems. Yeah. There's going to be all kinds of problems, and there's no way they can drive them. They're not going to be able to drive these cars in any way, shape, or form to cover my grandmother mm-hmm. to my 16-year-old kid.
Or to you.
Yeah. Or to me. Yeah. I think so. And they haven't asked me to drive them, probably because they don't want me to drive them. But no, your expectations are too high. This is no different than a refrigerator from the 50s to a refrigerator today that has Wi-Fi where you can actually open the beer when you pull into the driveway. In the refrigerator, it's not fair to hold them to that standard, because in the old days they would make one change, two changes, maybe 10 changes from year model to year model. Today we're seeing thousands of changes from one year to the next. So yeah, there is going to be technical service bulletins, but what's nice about that, it says if your customer says that intermittently they see orange smoke fill the back seat, then this is what we think it is, and this is what we think you should do to verify it, and this is the repair. They've already seen it happen. It's too late to recall thousands, if not thousands and thousands of cars. So they're saying to guys like us, if you see this, then this is what we want you to do, and if you see this, then when this is the repair we want you to make. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
And so we're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of that. Yeah. Okay, David, that do it?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, David, thank you very much. And when you're testing the new cars, I didn't answer his engine question. They put those motors through tremendous
crazy tests.
And they'll run them 200,000 miles in a short period of time.
Yeah.
And so they're putting mileages on those engines. And they're sometimes the engine's going downhill with just one person in it. Sometimes it's going uphill with loaded with golf clubs and all kinds of people and ice chests, and it's pulling a trailer.
Yeah.
So they're putting it in those kinds of environments. And frankly, would you agree with me that the motors of today are quite different than the 283, 327, 340?
Way different.
It's a different animal. Okay. And today I say this, but I say it with a grin. If you're gonna kill yourself by locking yourself in the garage with your car, it needs to be a 50, 60, 70 car, okay? And you'll be asleep and in heaven within a short period of time. Yeah. If you lock yourself in your garage, and I'm saying this just to draw to comparison, if you take your 2018 and put it in the garage, you're going to die of starvation before you die of asphyxiation.
Yeah, you might get a headache if you're lucky.
Yeah. So, but somebody said the other day to me, there's people that have the automatic cars that pull them into the driveway, and they don't push the button to kill the car.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So then they go into their house, and people are now dying in the house because the car's running in the garage, and they found at least 100 or so that have died from carbon monoxide poisoning because they didn't push the button. Now, here's what I say about that. How hard can that be from a software point of view to fix that problem?
If it's in park for 10 minutes, shut the engine off.
That's exactly right.
They're doing it.
That's exactly right.
I think it's programmed. My dad's truck will shut off in 10 minutes.
Okay. That could be, but we've had push buttons for about 4 years, I think, or longer.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to go back and change the software on those to keep people safe. I agree that if the car's idling in the garage, by the time it gets into the house, it might be hours later.
Yeah.
And then if you're asleep, you're not going to know because carbon monoxide doesn't have a taste.
Yeah.
And so you may die. I'm just drawing the comparison between the 50s cars and the newer model cars and dying of asphyxiation or starvation.
Yeah.
That's kind of the deal. All right. We got somebody on the phone. Who's next, Gil?
Gina is next.
Gina, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. Okay. I think I'm one of those people who keep thinking they're sick. I forgot the word, Robinson. Okay, this is about an oil change question.
Okay.
Okay. Is my truck old? Is it making a noise just because it's old? It's making a grinding noise when I turn it on, but then once I drive it, it's okay.
Okay.
Hypochondriac. That's what it was, hypochondriac.
Okay. All right. Well, noises are kind of easy to find if you can make the noise in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Gina, maybe it's a situation where you park your car at the shop that night and call the Uber driver and have him take you home. And then the next morning have Uber bring you back. And then together that with the shop staff, you start the car up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's really the thing. And if you do it like that, your expense of Uber back and forth, or Lyft, or whoever you have, or if you have your neighbor for free, do it. The idea is that pales into comparison to the savings that you're going to make on the diagnostic side.
Yeah, right.
Because you're creating a scenario that lets them diagnose it. Let's pretend this. They can diagnose it in 30 minutes as opposed to an hour and a half.
Sure.
Because you're there and you're saying that's the noise. So that's what I would do. Okay?
Okay, so it's not oh, one more question.
Okay.
It's not really a grinding. It's just kind of like, not even a squeaking. It just happens for a few seconds, and when I start driving, it's okay. So I'm thinking it's age, because it has all the fluids, and I just got a good oil change. And I'd like to get a shout-out for Action Auto. I took it there, and nothing's broke yet, so it's a good thing.
Okay.
And they're nice to me.
Okay.
You know what we find, Mark, sometimes on these older vehicles? Is the timing chain will loosen just a tad, and they'll rattle on for a start.
Right.
Just a touch.
But can we feel that on the cover by putting our fingers on the cover?
Yeah.
Can you feel that?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
A good grip. Now, what color is Eric's head? Because it's kind of shiny right now.
Look on the back.
What color is his hair?
The back's turned
right. Turn around.
Turn around.
Oh, it's got a little salt and pepper.
Yeah.
It's like mine. It's a little thin on the top, but the sides. But the idea is that's how you handle it. That's the easy way to handle it. All right. Thank you very much, Gina. Before we go on, let me tell you a real quick story that kicked our butt the other day. Just flat kicked us. The lady brings in a 2003 Acura MDX, and she's got a bad noise. And we tell her, she can't make it happen, so we tell her, mess with the fan. And she comes back the next day and she says, that's it. When I mess with the fan, that's it. So we go in and it's not making it for us, so we put a blower motor in it, underneath the dash, okay? Mm-hmm. It comes back a week later, and she says this, the blower motor's not working, but there's a little bit of air coming out of the back of the console. And I'm going, well, if the blower motor isn't working. So we look, and the blower motor we put in is defective. We have power and ground, so we put a new blower motor in, and it works fine. She brings it back again. Now, we're a little embarrassed at this point. There's no way in the world you could guess if I gave you the rest of your life. Any ideas? This piece of crap has two blower motors in it.
What?
It has one underneath the passenger compartment, the dash, and it has one in the center console, and they're connected by ductwork. So the motor in the back is the one that's bad, and the noise is resonating through the front. So she's hearing the noise, and she's saying it's up underneath the glove box, which is where the blower motor was that we replaced. And she says, but there's nothing coming out of the dash vents, but there's a little bit coming out of the back vents. Everything she said was true.
Huh.
Everything she said. So our blower motor's bad, so we put it back in, and now we got front blower motor, and we got air coming out of both ends. We got dash air coming out, and we got air coming out of the console for the back seat people. Then all of a sudden, she shows us a videotape on her thing, and there's a heck of a noise. But we figure out it's the back fan that's bad, but she's hearing it because the noise is resonating forward to the other fan. Okay? So, we bid the motor on the back. It's $900.
Huh.
Parts and labor is $900 for this blower motor that sits in the center console between the driver's and the passenger seat. So we say to her, we're going to fix it for you for $1. So we pulled the fuse on the rear motor, and we said, we're going to just cut down the air. We're not going to have the volume of air, cold air, to the backseat passengers. But on a 1 to 10 scale, we're going to move you from a 10 to a 6 or a 7, because we're still going to have the front blower motor moving air through that ductwork.
Who cares if the kids sweat anyways?
Yeah. So she doesn't have any kids. But nevertheless, is that the weirdest thing? Have you ever seen a car with two blower motors on the same circuit? And a $900 blower motor and labor bill? So we can fix your car for $900, but we'll fix it for $1 if you just let us pull the stupid fuse for that back blower.
Exactly.
That just ate our lunch. I bet we had 30 hours in that car and two blower motors. But we still can't explain why the front blower motor went bad other than a defective part.
Yeah.
So the car's been on the road for a week, and so far we haven't heard from her. And we told her if she did, we'd do. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'll get it right. 22 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Mark Salem here. The lines are open, 602-508-0960. Kurt Rock from Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bell is sitting to my left, and then Eric and Jeff are to my right, and they're all three Master Techs, and I'm a Master Tech, and we've had a lot of fun talking about cars today and weird ones. I mean, they've really challenged us today.
Yeah.
And I think in our defense, it's really an issue of is the more in, the better we can be.
Yeah.
So, but it's also important, I think you'll agree with me, that if it's going to be the answer to the question is going to be one of three, yes, no, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, the guys will always give us an answer when it should be an I don't know.
Yeah.
But the wife will tell us I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
And we get that a lot. We get those kinds of issues a lot with a yes, no, I don't know. Or a redirect. And it's just a guys versus girl thing. I had dinner with a doctor the other day, and it was my psychiatrist.
He's still speaking to you, huh? In
my head. Right now he's speaking
to me.
Oh,
okay.
And he said the same thing. When he deals with men and women, the women are more of an open book, and the guys are, you know, why are you asking me that or whatever, you know, like that. So it's just one of those things that does happen. But you guys, have you had anything that's really kicked your butt in a long time? Don't look at one another. Look at me. Nothing?
Well,
there's too many to pick from.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well, give me the synopsis of one. Eric.
Why me?
Because you're the one that's got the crap-eating grin on your face.
That's because I get stuck with all the junk.
And that's okay. That's okay. So you're the junk hero.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that's okay. I've got two or three of those. Yeah, you're right.
He's a shop catfish.
And you know what? That's an honor. Because when you have a you know, it comes in, it's a car that nobody else has fixed. It's been to every shop east of the Mississippi, west of the Mississippi River, blah, blah, blah. It's an honor to have them hand that car to you because they're saying to you, you're the best I got.
Yeah. You know the unfortunate thing, Mark?
What?
When I fix it, I throw it in the trash in my mind and I forget.
You forget?
Yeah. Unless that I never fixed it or if I didn't.
But you remember the cars you catch on fire. You remember the cars that you accidentally hit the windshield with a torque wrench and bust them. You remember all those.
That was Jeff.
That was Jeff.
Okay.
I hit that one time.
Yeah. I'm with you. But you remember the ones that ate your lunch.
Yeah.
Or you remember or the scars ones on you or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But it really has to do with communication. I think we need to do a better job. Our industry needs to do a better job with respect to teaching the customer what to say. It's kind of like this radio show. It's kind of symptoms. Questions, answers, symptoms, question, answers. If we can get the symptoms, the year, make, and model, the mileage of the car, and then we can talk about symptoms, and then we can ask them questions like that MDX motor. Now we know on those kinds of MDXs, we're going to say put your hand on the glove box when the noise is making and put your hands on the back of the console and tell us which blower is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you can't tell the difference if they're common ductwork.
So we're
learning as we go along. But the thing that's difficult to do is to start off with, like I talk about that email that I shared with you guys. I have a hiccup and this is what I've done. And it's a huge email that talks about all the stuff that they've done, but you can't help them because you all you got is a hiccup. And that's a difficult thing to diagnose. But then they put spark plugs and fuel injectors and what else did they put in?
Distributor
and stuff.
Wires,
a couple times.
Caps, yeah.
Yeah, and wires. And so at the end of the day, you can say, well, it's not none of those.
Yeah, but we know a lot it ain't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the difficult part. I just think that going to YouTube or having somebody on the Internet guess for you is a bad idea because you don't know who they are, and you don't know if they're a doctor, a lawyer, a candlestick maker. You don't know if they're a farmer. You don't know if they're a convict. You don't know if they're a gynecologist. You don't know any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, and I say that fondly of all of those professions because they're all valid professions. But when you're on the Internet and some guy's saying, oh, I know that's a mass airflow sensor, so you're going to go spend $400 on a new mass airflow sensor, and the chances of that being right without any give and take are slim and none.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It has to be give and take.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you start replacing parts without understanding how the system actually works, you're gonna get steered the wrong direction.
And then I say more times than I'm really comfortable, I say to people, you've already spent two or three times what it would have cost you to diagnose this.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't have done all that stuff, spark plugs, wires, fuel injectors, da-da-da-da-da-da, timing chains, if you wouldn't have done all that and just brought it in, we would have probably diagnosed that same. And now on that email, mm-hmm. I said 75 to 250
mm-hmm.
because that was going to be a chore.
Yeah.
Because now we have, and he also put a distributor in it, now we have a new set of problems because of the distributor. So we have to fix that before we can fix his other. So I opened up the window huge on the diagnostic
yes.
just to cover everybody.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what we do. So nevertheless, we got somebody on the phone. And Gil, who would that be?
That would be Barry.
Barry, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2002 I-35 3.5 liter, and recently in the morning on a cold start, it turns over and starts right away and then dies about a second later. It's been doing it intermittently, but never does it when it's hot, and then it drives fine once I get it going here. And
okay.
So no check engine lights, so all right. I diagnose something like this.
Okay, well, we need to get the stuff. On a cold restart, it dies a lot, and that tells us all we need to know. So it's not a hot restart. It's
right.
a cold mm-hmm. restart.
And it means something you have to be able to leave for a few days probably.
Right, right. And so what we're looking for is spark or fuel. So we're going to hook our equipment up, and so we're going to start it in the morning, and we're going to ask you to demonstrate exactly how you start it. Is your foot on the gas? We know your foot's on the brake. We want to know how long it cranks before it hits. So you go in the morning, it goes, but when it's warm, it goes, and so it cranks and hits right away when it's warm, but there's an extended cranking period when it's cold. Mm-hmm. That's important to us.
Yes.
1 minute.
So as we go through those kinds of gyrations, that's the give and take. Now, we're not doing that to impress you. We're trying to save you money on the diagnostic side, because if you come in and say, I have an extended cranking problem in the morning, and when I do get it to start, it dies, and that happens two or three times before it'll idle, and it never happens at night, Mr. Big Shot Eric, what is it?
I'm going to say you probably got a pressure regulator.
Exactly. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. And Eric's shaking his head and Kurt's shaking his head. That kind of stuff makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if it's a fuel pressure regulator that's got a vacuum line to it, the easy thing would be pull the vacuum line off and sniff it.
Yeah.
And that's what we call the lower technicians over to have them sniff it for us.
And watch this.
Yeah. You're right. Watch this. That's something terrible.
Exactly.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Kurt and the boys from Kurt's Auto and Mark Salem, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Mark Salem, and Kurt's crew is here. Kurt is here from Kurt's Auto at I-17 and Bell. Jeff is here. Jeff, you handle the front counter and the technicians.
Yeah, I do.
And
I take care of it all.
And Eric is your lead tech, and he's the one he's the mule that carries the shop if somebody gets into trouble.
I don't know if it's a mule. Is he?
Okay, well,
close.
We can call him. There's a slight difference between a mule and a jackass, okay? And Eric, we're not going to say anything, okay? Speaking of good people, though, Strictly Diesel is up near your area. He's right off of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Strictly Diesel is just that, Strictly Diesel, foreign domestic light diesel trucks, but they know really a lot about diesels. Monday through Friday, they're open, but they sell parts 24 hours a day on their website, Strictly Diesel. So I know Nate that owns Strictly Diesel, and the one thing that you're going to, if you walk in the door and you talk to Nate, you're going to remember two things about Nate. Number one, I think he's 9 feet tall. And number two, his hands look like tennis rackets. But he's the kindest man you've ever met in your life, and he knows the Dodge, the Chevy, and the Ford diesels like nobody I've seen. So Strictly Diesel, north side of town, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak. It's worth the drive if you've got a diesel nobody else can fix. We're going to go to the phones. And Robbie, ladies first, how can we help you?
Hi, Jeff. I have a question on my husband's 2010 Jeep Wrangler.
Okay.
It makes a whiny noise, not all the time. It isn't currently doing it, but off and on, it'll start a whining noise. And at first, I thought it might be the power steering, but it stopped.
Okay. I think what we would say to you is you have to figure out how to make the noise change.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. And
it
I know
does. It does. It does stop on its own. So.
Okay. But you might turn the air conditioning on and off. You
okay.
might pull into a parking lot and turn the steering wheel left and right.
Okay.
You might adjust your fan speeds. And then if you can at least identify what corner of the car the noise is coming from,
mm-hmm.
under the hood, the right front, the left front, the back of the car, the right rear. And sometimes if you know that it's becoming more more predominant, then you and your husband can change places. It's not uncommon for us to have a technician drive and have two or three in the car as they drive around,
mm-hmm.
and the driver
mm-hmm.
makes it happen, and the guy in the right rear says, that vibration is underneath my butt, and the other two goes, I'm not feeling
mm-hmm.
it. So now we know that mm-hmm. the vibration is underneath the right rear corner. So
okay.
That's
okay.
what has to
okay.
happen. Okay?
Good idea.
All right.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mark.
You're welcome, ma'am. Peter, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, I probably have an easy question and a stupid question. I've got a 2016 Corvette Stingray.
Okay.
And I want to know, as far as the oil change goes, should it be based on time or miles?
How many miles a year are you going to drive it?
I don't drive it much. I have several vehicles. This vehicle was bought new in 2016, so I got 3,000 miles, and I've never changed the oil since I bought it.
30,000 miles.
Three.
3,000.
3,000.
Okay.
3,000.
I think what I would do.
I'll do once a year.
Once a year. We'll all agree once a year, no matter how many times you do it. I would suggest that you do it in April or May at the beginning of the summer, so we go through the summer with fresh oil.
Mm-hmm.
And what's he going to use? Conventional, blended, or synthetic?
Probably Mobil 1.
Specify a synthetic on that.
Okay. So you're going to have an oil change once a year, and you're going to use the one that they call for probably a 020.
Yeah.
Okay, a 020 synthetic or 1030 synthetic or something like that.
Yeah. 2 minutes.
And that's what we're going to answer that question that way. You had a second question.
No.
That was it.
I assume just check off. Fuel fluid levels at the same time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And part of an oil change is checking all the belts, the hoses, the fluids, airing up your tires, checking your lights, checking your windshield wipers, and trying to determine what might not go good between now and the next oil change. Mm-hmm. Now, none of us have crystal balls in every sense of the word, but we're going to look at your car. The other day, I'm proud to tell you that I took my truck in for an oil change, and they found out the third brake light wasn't working, and they found out the gasket had failed and water had gone in there and popped the bulb. I was pretty proud of them.
Yeah.
Never mind it's my truck, but for them to find that, I was pretty proud of them. But, yes, you're right. An inspection is part of the oil change procedure. An inspection not to sell you a bunch of crap, an inspection to find out what might be wrong and you need to budget for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I had to get a floated loan to have them do the bulb for me. And so they're going to give me payments on it for the next couple of days. All righty. I want to talk about Action Auto. We did talk about Action Auto already. I-17 on Deer Valley. He's a really good guy. And he's a guy that's really, really good at what he does. But Auto Dynamics on the west side is equally as good. I've known Chuck and Derek. I've known Chuck, his father, since 1968. And I'm pretty proud of Derek, who's the second generation of Chuck's family, to take over Auto Dynamics. And it's a good shop. He's on Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. And it's kind of an unusual thing, but he does not pay his staff or mechanic a commission or a percentage of the repair bill. Therefore, he ensures they don't sell unnecessary parts or repairs. Not everybody does that, but somebody who does do that is serious to make sure the technician's not selling something to butter their bread. And that's kind of important. We'll be back right after this. You know, that song just, I have it on my thumb drive, and I'm going to be driving up north after we leave here, and my wife will push the button to go to the next song every time. She says, don't you get tired of that song? And I said, no, I don't. It's just something that I like. Anyway, Thompson's Auto Repair is in Mesa, and they're the only shop in Mesa that actually has made the effort and applied and made the hoops that we have to be on our best car repair shop list. You can find that at marksalem.com. But Thompson's Auto Repair, Brian and Thelma are actually second or third generations of Vivian and Thompson family that's been in Mesa, and they go back to the 1960s. So this is kind of the third generation. And at Thompson's Auto Repair, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. They have ASC certified technicians. They really do. They understand that you diagnose it, you bid it, you fix it, and then you verify the repair. They understand that process. Now, every once in a while, we all make a mistake, but the most of the time when you diagnose it and you bid it and you fix it and then you verify that the symptom's gone, that usually works, and it does for Thompson. So if you're in Mesa, the only choice you have as far as Mark Salem is concerned is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, and again, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. Chris, thank you for holding as long as you have. How can we help you?
Hello, Mark. Well, I got a couple questions, but if you don't mind, I just want to toss out a big thank you to you for something you did. You don't even know who I am, but a few years back, I worked with someone, and their husband had been to a dealership, and they had not put the lug nuts back on the wheels after a tire rotation, and as he was entering the highway, one of the wheels came off, and so they asked me what to do, and I don't have a clue. I told them, call Mark Salem, and it turns out you knew the dealer, and I won't mention it, but everybody was happy, and everybody's been reasonable, and there hasn't, you know, they were given some extended warranty on their front end work due to the damage, but you really took care of that, and they felt so much better after they talked to you. So,
well,
there's a thank you from a longtime listener who's never called you before.
Okay, well, let me, I remember the situation. It's all of us have left wheels loose.
Yes.
All of us. And we left one on a BMW the other day. It bounced across the street. It damaged two cars, and I couldn't write checks fast enough.
Yeah.
Because the option is by the time they get to the Eagle or the Beaver or the Hawk, then everybody's screwed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just fixing cars and handing out money and making it as good as I can. And I think that's why the dealer jumped on this real quick.
Yeah.
It's because this is the path of least resistance. Let's just make them happy the best we can. Now, if the customer has a stiff neck and wants $10,000 on top of the repair, then the insurance company's going to get involved,
yeah,
and the lawyers are going to get involved. But clearly, the two of them maintained their composure, and that's what it tells me. But Peter, thank you very much for that. I appreciate you commenting. Chris is your name.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. No problem.
So let me get to my question. You've been mentioning these used car checks, and that may be my question, but it could have a little twist on it, because I'm looking at a 98 Park Avenue, and this is kind of a charity thing. Some family are trying to get a car for a priest who's been moved to New Mexico. We're from Michigan, so it's kind of like we're trying to find a priced car that he can afford, or that we can donate to him. But 98 Park Avenue, it's a 95-year-old gentleman. I doubt he's driven it in quite a while. 88,000 miles, and, you know, garage parked, and he's looking for about $2,000, so the price might be right. But this has probably not been driven in quite a while. So it's around Tatum and Mayo in the Desert Ridge area. I'm wondering, do you have a place I could go to, or is there people who come out and look at it, or
no,
do you have to take the car in? Do you tow it?
Yeah, no. First of all, I want to tell you, I'll buy it if you don't for $2,000.
Yeah.
How many miles has it got on it?
It said 88,000.
88. Yeah. Oh, I'll if you don't buy it for $2,000, I'll buy it for $2,000.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
That's a throwaway car. That's kind of like a Bic Lighter car.
Yeah.
Even if you had to put $100 a month in that car to fix it, $100 to drive a car like a Park Avenue that's got probably a V6, a 3.8 liters, probably got good air conditioning,
yeah,
what would that be?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
$100 a month is nothing.
Yeah.
So, now, Tatum and where are you at?
Around Tatum and Mayo.
101 and Tatum.
Right? Okay, 101 and Tatum.
101 and Tatum.
All righty. Then I'm going to say Blackwell, 40th Street and Greenway. 40th Street and Greenway, Tom Blackwell. You can say, I call up Tom and say, I want to do a used car checkover. And how much is your used car checkover? And what's yours, Eric? Used car checkover. Jeff, I'm looking at you.
About $90.
And ours is $100, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a pretty thorough inspection.
Yes.
Tell Tom Blackwell that you call him and make an appointment and just say, I was talking to Mark Salem, and he said you couldn't find your butt with both hands, but he thought you might be the guy to be able to do a used car checkover. And it's not because I want any money. I don't accept that. It just opens the door to let him know that you're a referral of mine, and so that Tom's on his best behavior.
Very good. So, and I imagine he'll be looking, you know, I mean, it's got to need a bear to be in. Well, they're looking at really end up with, you know, a bunch of work to do, right?
Right. And I think what you say to him is let's get rid of the stuff that might break it down and maybe a safety issue. Let's do that first.
But let's not worry about that the back window motor doesn't work on the door. Let's forget that. No. Let's just deal with safety issues and dependability issues, and then we'll kind of do the cosmetic stuff later. Yeah. So that's what I think you should do. Alrighty, thank you for that, Chris. Thank you very much. And by the way, we don't normally roll that 100 into the repair, at least I don't.
No.
Because it's two separate things. There's no duplication of labor.
Right.
So it's a matter of, here's the inspection, and if you write it down and you give it to them, then they'll benefit from that. Alrighty, Al. Al's up next. How can I help you, Al?
I have a friend that has a Hennessy Viper. Okay. And when you drive it for a while and it starts to warm up, the needle never goes over the center mark to tell if it's hot or not. It tells you when it's cold, but it goes up and stays in about the center when you're driving the thing.
Okay.
And when you're driving it, when it's cold, it'll run up to 5,000 RPM with no problem. But if you let it warm up and drive it for an hour or something, and you go to stand on it a little bit, when it hits 3,000 RPM, it starts to break up really bad.
Okay, well, you got two separate problems here, and I don't think that the gauge is an issue, but I can tell you this much. If you go to Harbor Freight and buy a temperature gun, go driving on the freeway for 30 minutes and just gun the lower hose, I'll bet it's 210 or north of 210.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, then there's no harm, no foul. With respect to the Hennessy, that's a heavily modified Viper. And so when you lose the RPM, the question really is can we get scanner data that gives us an idea of what that is? Are we losing RPM because the exhaust seems to be restricted? Are we losing RPM because we got a knock sensor that's chattering at us? Help me out here.
Yeah.
Just jump in.
Cam sensor problem. Cam crank correlation.
And so we've got the difference appears to be cold and hot.
Yeah.
So we got something that's limiting us at 3,000 RPM. I think most of us could look at scanner data, and I think that's going to cost you $75 to $125 to look at scanner data. And I think, here, fill in the blank, we have a what percentage chance of at least finding the trail?
Pretty good, 80% or 20%.
I'm with you. I was going to say 75. I was going to say 75% of the time we're going to at least know what's going on. We may not know what's causing it, but at least we know what's going on.
Yeah.
Now, it's not going to... It obviously, Ed doesn't have a check engine light, which would give us some kind of an idea because he would have said something.
Yeah.
But the idea is I think we could scan it. What part of town are you in, Al? Or what part of town is your friend in?
He's at Union Hills and 75th Avenue.
Okay, he's on the way west side. I would call Tom at Thunderbird Auto and see if he wants to drive it and see what it's doing and take a look at it. Most of us will drive it and take a look at it and talk to you for nothing, as long as we're not talking for an hour. So most of us will do that for you. But I would take it to Tom, or call Tom at Thunderbird and ask him if he wants to take a look. And I think the issue here is when it's warm, we're cutting off at 3,000 RPM. When it's cold, we're not. Is that right? Is that a synopsis of what you said?
That's a synopsis of exactly what it's doing.
And we need
it. You can take it out in the freeway and let it cool down. And when it cools down, you stand on it on the freeway, and it comes right to life. It'll come right to life. But if you let it around town, you let it warm up again, that needle up to the in the center, when you stand on the throttle, the thing starts to break up.
Yeah. It could easily be that the temperature sensor is bad, and the dashboard signal is one thing, but the coolant sensor is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have two different sensors. One talks to the dash, and one talks to the computer. And if the one of the dash is defective, then the one to the computer is different, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So that's scanner data that we would likely pick up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if somebody brought it in and you did scanner data, give me a range. As little as and as much as.
It's 100 to 150 somewhere.
Okay. And it's because we're going to have to also check some of the outputs. So we have an engine vacuum that's at 16 inches and we want 18 inches. So that necessitates us getting the vacuum gauge and verifying, do we have the right information going to the computer?
Right.
So if we see 18 and we see 14 on the scanner, then we need to figure out why.
Yeah.
Most of the time in that condition, I'm thinking that the orifice is plugged with carbon. And it's substandard vacuum that's being sent to that sensor or something like that.
Yeah.
Something that wouldn't be 100% of the time, but that would be something that you'd look at. So I don't think that that's going to be an easy one. It's not going to be as easy as a stock Viper would be because it's been modified heavily, but I still think it's fixable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's fixable. So Tom would be good. You can go to Kurtz. They're sitting right here. That's I-17 and Bell. It would be something that they'd want you to demonstrate and then leave it with you for a while.
Yeah.
Because that's something you're going to have to focus on for a little while.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you very much for that, Al. Good luck to you. Good luck to you. So when it comes to car repair, I think what's changed now is the communication between us and the customer.
Mm.
We have to somehow talk to them and explain to them without talking about wavelengths,
ohms, resistance,
and resistance, and dwell, and cycling switches, and all that kind of stuff. We kind of have to just dumb it down. And I don't mean this derogatory, but we have to just kind of explain to them. There are pressure sensors in your exhaust. Where's one in front of, I'm making this up, one in front and behind the catalytic converter. The one in the front when you're going fast, the one in the front showing high pressure, and the one in the back has got a whisper. The cat's plugged up. It's in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then we're going to look at that. So it's kind of a common sense thing, but the answer is the reason why you couldn't, after it warms up, you couldn't go past 3,000 RPM is now that I fixed it, it's the cat was plugged up. And you need to drive this a little harder because it's richening up, and this motor needs a little bit more fuel, and going to the store and shifting it, is not going to work.
No.
So if you have a grandson that's 18 years old and responsible, have him drive this car once a month and take it out on the freeway and do the 101 loop one time on a Sunday morning when nobody's out there, and that would help it.
Yeah.
How many times have you guys taken an older car and roughhoused it and fixed it?
A few times. It's happened.
We had one just the other day that we just had a rough idle. And we took it out, and it was kind of a James Bond car. You get on the entrance ramp on the freeway, you throttle it down real hard, and the smoke behind it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after you get on and off a couple of entrance ramps, then all of a sudden it's clean burning, and now you have an idle, a quality idle. So then you go back and you say, who owns this? And, well, Mrs. Salem owns it. She's 81 years old, and last year she drove, 1,800 miles. And she just goes from her house to the liquor store and back or whatever, and I'm teasing you. But that's kind of the issue that you have.
You know what we're also finding now, though, what? Is because they're running so many more sensors and they're trying to lighten the weight,
mm-hmm.
and then vehicles are lasting longer,
yeah.
we're having way more wiring and connection problems than ever.
And that has a lot to do with the compaction of everything.
Yeah.
And because we have all these new sensors, we obviously have to have information in and information out, which gives us 3, 4, 5, 6 more wires. And that's going to be a new harness. And then we've got this motor rocking and shaking underneath the hood. And all of a sudden, it's pulling itself apart. So you're absolutely right. We see problems that we never had before.
Yeah.
But we never had power and performance that we have today.
We don't.
That we had. No matter what the old guys in the 50s and 60s and 70s talks about Mustangs and Camaros and big block Chevys, mm-hmm. we got four cylinders with a turbo that'll blow those cars' doors in.
Well, now they're building cars out from the factory that are turning less than 10 seconds.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's just crazy stuff.
Well, and then back in the old days in the 70s, you'd do a 70 Chevelle and it'd do a 12 if you were lucky, and sometimes
a
14.
Hot,
and that was a hot car.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get into the Ford and the Chrysler kind of stuff. Thank you guys for spending your Saturday
with
me.
Thanks for having us today.
All righty. And that's Kurtz Auto, I-17 and Bell. We've got Kurtz here. He's there every once in a while. Eric is running the show. And then, Jeff is running the show, and Eric's a good guy, too. We'll see you next week.